On this episode of The Big Number, we dive into the stats to answer these questions. How much can we expect Giannis Antetokounmpo to still be a top five MVP player in the Miami Heat uniform? And LaMelo Ball to the Minnesota Timberwolves, Naz Reid to the Charlotte Hornets. What do we make of this deal? And do we think the LaMelo Ball Minnesota Timberwolves will win a championship next to Anthony Edwards? All this and more coming up right now. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Welcome to The Big Number. I am Tom Haberstroh, and we have not been traded, Dan. Not yet, at least. There's lots of trades happening in the NBA, including Giannis Antetokounmpo. We just got a LaMelo Ball trade. The NBA Finals is done. We already did the Knicks recap episode last week. We got a monster trade with the Giannis deal to Miami. I just want to check in and see how you're doing, Dan.
I'm good. You saying we haven't been traded, I'm like, that we know of, man. I'm refreshing the social channels. I haven't opened up Slack because, you know, I try to be present while we were recording. But man, no downtime, man. I was picking up my daughter the other day and one of the guys at the school was like, so now is it like chill out for you? I was like, dog, there's Giannis watch. There's the draft. There's free agency. I didn't even know I needed to say LaMelo Ball's about to get traded. So yeah, there's I'm you know, all over the place, as I'm sure you are. I know you were just on with KOC and we're talking now. So let's hit it, Tom. Hit me with it. Let's put up some numbers. What is this week's big number?
This week's big number, Dan, is 2.9. That is the number of all NBA awards that we can expect for Giannis Antetokounmpo going forward with the Miami Heat. 2.9. You might be asking yourself, well, how did you get to that number? Well, I looked up all of the MVPs, modern day MVPs, bigs, since 1990, so we're talking Hakeem Olajuwon, Kevin Garnett, Tim Duncan, Shaq, David Robinson. There's eight bigs since 1990 that have won an MVP award. And I was curious to see, of those eight guys, how many all-NBA awards did they earn after their age 31 season? Because that's what we're talking about here with Giannis, is how much does he have left, or how much that he can expect after they traded four players and a bunch of picks in that acquisition. In order to get Giannis Antetokounmpo, they have to bet that this guy is going to play at this level for a long time. And that even though he is on the back nine of his NBA career, I think you can expect three All-NBA seasons, potentially an MVP season, but three All-NBA seasons, and though that group of MVP caliber bigs, they won 32 All-Stars among the eight of them after the age of 31. So, Dan, that we're talking four All-Star appearances and about three All-NBA appearances for Giannis Antetokounmpo is the baseline. That is the expectation. Charles Barkley had one All-NBA appearance and two All-Star appearances. KG, zero All-NBA appearances after the age of 31. After his age 31 season, and that's at Basketball Reference. Four All-Stars, five All-Stars for Dirk, six All-Stars for Karl Malone, five All-Stars for Tim Duncan, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What I'm trying to say is, Dan, that there is a lot of concern about Giannis Antetokounmpo's body holding up as he ages into his mid-30s. But historically, if you're this good enough to be an MVP as a big man in the NBA, if you're in that top echelon, you still, in your mid-30s, are going to have a lot of good years left. And so for the Miami Heat going all in, oh, I shouldn't say all in because they kept Bam Adebayo on the team.
Sure.
They put in a lot of chips into get Giannis Antetokounmpo. And I know there's some concern from people that saying Giannis's body's not going to hold up. And while it's certainly possible it doesn't, we have seen this from in NBA history that after the age of 31, 32, things go downhill, but not when you're this good and this talented like Giannis Antetokounmpo. So yeah, 23 All-NBA appearances between those eight, former MVP modern day bigs, and 32 All-Star appearances among the eight of them after this point in their career. So Dan, when you saw that Giannis is finally, the saga is concluded, and that he went to Miami, what did you think of the deal, and whether you thought, hey, of all teams to acquire Giannis Antetokounmpo, it's the one that got Shaq and won a championship, that got LeBron and Kevin and Chris Bosh and won a championship, and when they got Jimmy Butler, went to two NBA finals with him. What did you think of the deal?
Yeah, my first thought was just like, oh, the Heat are back. You know, like it's you're right to point to all those, you know, iconic players that they've imported and trade over the years and saying, you know, that they do it all the time. It even goes back further, right? It's Alonzo Mourning in 1995. It's Tim Hardaway in 1996. Like they just go get all, you know, future Hall of Famers, right? It's kind of what they do. And to look at it and say that they've been doing that, like the number of Hall of Fame big swings, they've only been around since 1988. Like, it's wild that they have accumulated this many. I mean, it's the power of South Beach and no state income tax and all that stuff, right? So that was my first thought was, oh, after, you know, swinging and missing on KD and on Donovan Mitchell and, you know, Damian Lillard a few years back and, you know, insert other star players here, the Heat get their guy, right? Pat Riley goes and he actually lands the big fish for the first time in a few years. My next sort of thought was, I guess to your point, while Giannis is this good, how good does this make the Miami Heat, right? I think we often talk about when a player of this caliber changes teams, and not that very many of them often do, but when they do, it like changes the balance of power in the NBA. And I started to think like, does that really now, right? Like, I love Giannis. I love Bam. I think it's important to remember because we didn't see him a ton last year. And so much of when we did see him was kind of clouded by the overarching negativity in Milwaukee. Like, Giannis was still a top five player when he was on the floor last season. He was still one of the absolute elite impact players in the NBA just when he was on the floor. He just wasn't on the floor as often. And that's part of the concern that you're talking about with how he's going to age. So I look at it and I say, you having the starting point of Giannis plus Bam, that to me feels like it guarantees a top five caliber defense. And then where it goes on the offensive end is very interesting and will depend on how the roster gets filled out around them, which we can talk about. But I found myself coming away from it thinking, I don't want to underestimate what that pairing of two, you know, all NBA caliber two-way big men can do. I don't want to, you know, oversell what I think is left there in the cupboard, because it wasn't like, you know, the kind of all-in deal where the Heat just, you know, the overwhelming amount of talent that goes out. It's more that there wasn't really an overwhelming amount of talent in to begin with. So what is left for the Miami Heat is kind of a question mark. And I think then there's also some open roster spots to fill, which are other huge question marks here. And then sort of moving on that, you know, to your point of the 2.9 big number of like maybe three expected all NBA finishes, maybe four expected all-star finishes the rest of the way. Well, they're getting him for this season. I think the overwhelming likelihood here is that they're going to offer that four-year $275 million contract extension that he's eligible for come January 6th. I think the overwhelming likelihood is that he will take it and sign that extension to stay in Miami. So then we're talking about 5 years out for Giannis at this point. And I'm not a great mathematician, but 3 and 4 are lower than 5. So I'm wondering if in the out years of this deal, when Giannis is making $76, $77 million and not playing at an all-NBA all-star level, you know, what does that look like? But those are tomorrow's problems. And for today, Giannis plus Bam figures like it's going to be a pretty big problem for everybody else.
Yeah. I mean, the numbers from cleaning the glass are pretty outrageous when you look at the on-court impact of Giannis Antetokounmpo when he was on the floor versus when he was off the floor. And given that the Milwaukee Bucks, yes, they were one of the worst teams in the NBA last season, 32-50. But so much of that was just tanking. And I don't know if you caught this, the interview with Doc Rivers and Bill Simmons when they were talking about Giannis and whether he was healthy. Doc was like, no, he's healthy. Oh, he's healthy. And I was like, whoa. They went through a union battle. Excuse me. They went through a union battle because the Giannis's camp was alleging that the Bucks were holding him out unfairly and illegally, holding him out and because he was healthy. And then the NBA decided that's any such appeal. They weren't going to award Giannis with any sort of considerations there. And they ruled in favor of the Milwaukee Bucks. But then you have Doc Rivers say that he's 100% healthy. So look, the NBA, there's a lot going on in that dispute between the Bucks and Giannis's camp, and now it's in the hands of the Miami Heat, Pat Riley, Andy Ellisberg, Adam Simon, Alonzo Mourning, and Eric Spoelstra. What they do is they make big swings and they say F them picks. Dan, Mikal Bridges made that line famous by saying F them picks in the aftermath of the NBA championship. But I think the Miami Heat have been screaming that from atop the Miami skyline for years and decades. We're talking since 1989, the Miami Heat, in why I checked this is because of the trade that they sent to Milwaukee with four of their picks that none of them were in the top 10. You're talking Tyler Hero, you're talking Jakachonis, you're talking Khalil Ware, Jaime Jaquez Jr. None of them were top 12 picks in the NBA draft. And they were like, that's fine. We'll get all-stars and sixth man of the year and guys enough to go get a Giannis MVP caliber player. No problem. Historically, they've had 14 first-round picks since 1989, which is the least in the NBA by far. They don't number one.
It's not one a year or anything like that. Yeah.
That's what? Potentially, if they took a draft pick every year, that's what, 37 years? Just doing the math off, 37 right, years, yeah. And they've only taken 14 first-round picks. So it's they don't care about getting high lottery picks. Bam Adebayo, not a high lottery pick. And then you say, all right, well, they gave up picks and all these players. Well, I have less concern about gutting this team to get Giannis than I would if it was another team. You know, like if another team had put so many of those assets into a deal to get Giannis and Antetokounmpo, I would say that's a scary proposition for that team. But the Miami Heat turn so many of the pieces of trash around the league and turn them into treasure. That is what they do. Even their lottery picks that they've had, we're talking since the Dwayne Wade era, they've had Michael Beasley. And then they had Justice Winslow as their only top 10 picks. So I can understand, Dan, why they're like, "What? Yeah, go take Tyler Hero. Go take Jakachonis. We turned a bunch of late first rounders into Giannis Antetokounmpo, and that's the price that we paid to get Giannis. Of course we're going to do that 10 times over. Now they got to fill out the roster, but Pelle Larsson, like he's going to turn into like a sixth man of the year candidate next year. Myron Gardner, he's going to be awesome next year. Davion Mitchell is going to be like an all-star. Given all of the what the Miami Heat and Eric Spoelstra have done over the years, they keep turning into these, whether it's James Johnson, Tyler Johnson, you keep getting these guys off the scrap heap and turning them into really good players. And so, Dan, I do have concerns about their ability to fill out the roster, but of any team, I feel like the Miami Heat should have the benefit of the doubt about filling out their roster and finding guys to build around Bam Adebayo and Giannis and Antetokounmpo. Andrew Wiggins set to be a free agent too. He might take a below market deal to play with Giannis and Antetokounmpo, of course. Nikola Jovic also on the roster here and potential trade, dangling trade piece. Drew Smith also on the roster. They got to get more shooting, no doubt about it. But this is a team that I have less concerns about how they're going to build around Giannis and Antetokounmpo because they got Giannis and Antetokounmpo. They still have Bam Adebayo. And I think the Miami Heat are going to be in the upper crust of the Eastern Conference because Giannis, I feel like he's, if we learned anything from that Milwaukee Journal Sentinel article, if you haven't read it, go read it right now. Dan, he's been very frustrated with the coaching and whether they have what it takes to build a championship around him. I have less concern about that with the Miami Heat. I think he's going to be very happy with Eric Spoelstra.
Yeah, well, shouts out to Jim Ocharski at the Journal Sentinel for the fantastic reporting on that. But yeah, I mean, there's a proven track record, right? We've seen the Miami Heat repeatedly over the course of the last several decades produce finals caliber teams that can, even, you know, the Jimmy teams that didn't make it to the finals were still perennial playoff teams for the most part and went to the Eastern Conference Finals, were within like a Jimmy Butler, three in the air against the Celtics of going to multiple finals in a row during that run. And so, you know, there's the track record is there, right? The ability, as you mentioned, of finding those sort of fringe prospects or G League players and, you know, sort of churning through them, finding guys that can produce above their expected draft slot or their undrafted free agents turning into rotation players, et cetera. I think that's reasonable. I do. The thing that I wonder, though, as we talk about where they're going to slot in, you say that you expect them to be kind of in the upper crust, upper echelon. The Eastern Conference, so you know, I think so roundly kind of considered a punching bag for most of the last, you know, couple decades as the Western powers were, you know, in ascension and lording over the league. Like the Knicks just won the championship. The Pistons just won 60 games and I think stand a really good chance of improving this season, this offseason, perhaps including by getting one of those former Heat shooting guards, whether it's Hero in a redirected trade from the Bucks or Norman Powell in free agency if he gets as he's, you know, poised to get there. The Celtics, they didn't make the Giannis trade and they're, you know, sort of cast as one of the big losers of this deal, but they were a 56 win team with Jason Tatum barely playing last season. And if they smooth things out with Jaylen Brown or turn Jaylen Brown into multiple pieces that might fit, like, I think there's a reason to believe that the Celtics are still going to be really good. You know, the Cavs just made the conference finals. The Raptors, I think, are motivated to improve their roster and were a playoff team. There's, you know, the Hawks, the Sixers are a perpetual, you know, question box or mystery box, and you don't know what to make out of their roster. But, you know, mid-40s win team with talent there. Like, I think we all expect the Indiana Pacers to take a big leap back up the standings with Tyrese Halliburton back and with Ivica Zubac now in the lineup alongside Pascal Siakam. Like, the top of the East isn't easy to break through. And so, yeah, the Heat, I think we certainly expect them to be better, right? I think expecting that if you get a mostly full season of Giannis Antetokounmpo next to Bam Adebayo, the baseline there, the floor should be really high. I think the question of how high the ceiling is reasonable. I think obviously much of it depends on how that roster gets filled out, yeah, as we'll talk about. But I think you wind up looking at the state of play in the East and say, to me, it is at least as reasonable that the Heat are still kind of like slugging it out for sixth or, you know, fifth than that they are slugging it out for the first seed. And whether that, I mean, like, you're right, there was really no opportunity or very little opportunity cost for the Heat and the roster that they had in making this move for Giannis. I think it is a reasonable question, though, of just how high they climb. And that's going to be, I think, determined to a large degree by A, obviously Giannis's health, but also what else they can do with the limited space they've got, those open roster spots, the cap flexibility that's left to be able to round out the roster around him. And then how healthy and successful those guys are. I mean, the relevant sample here, the relevant example in Heat history was that first year after they go and they trade for, or they bring in LeBron James, they bring in Chris Bosh to pair with Dwayne Wade. It was, okay, where do we fill out the rest of the roster? And it's like, is Eric Dampier the answer? Is Mike Bibby the answer? Is, you know, like, is Eddie House the answer? And it took a little while for Riley and company to sort of find the right pieces around. And obviously they made the finals that first year, but that was prime LeBron, prime Bosh, prime Wade. And this is a different set of circumstances. So I don't want to throw cold water on this totally, but I do think it's reasonable to wonder, like, just how high this jumps them up in what is shaping up to be a really competitive East.
Yeah, I mean, I totally hear that. And it does depend on the health of Giannis. He only played 36 games last season, dealing with injuries, calf issues. It's scary. I wrote a long feature for Yahoo last year, early in the season, about the two scariest words in the NBA was calf strain. And he was a big reason why I wrote that article, was continuous, consistent issues with the calf and people worrying about whether the Milwaukee Bucks would see another Damian Lillard situation on their hands, where he tore, unfortunately, his Achilles tendon in the playoffs last season, 2 seasons ago. And so it is a question of how well you can expect the Milwaukee Bucks to be, I mean, the Miami Heat to be, if Giannis doesn't play 60 games next season. You know, that would mean that they would probably fall closer to that sixth seed, like you said, given that he only played 36 games last season. If that happens again, the Miami Heat are in trouble, certainly, given the depth of this roster. But, you know, if you look at cleaning the glass in terms of the on-court impact, the net rating of the Milwaukee Bucks when he was on the floor compared to when he was off the floor, he was top three in the entire NBA. Third most impactful guy in the NBA when we talk about Jokic and Wembanyama, Giannis was right there, right behind those two guys. So the impact is there. If he's there for 70 games next season, I think the Miami Heat will be in contention for the number one seed. That's how good this defense is going to be next to Bam Adebayo and Eric Spoelstra. If they get Wiggins back, if you're talking about Andrew Wiggins, who can switch, I mean, they have 3, 4, and 5, basically can switch 1 through 5 mm-hmm. and stay in front of anybody. It's going to be incredibly hard for the length that they would have. Davion Mitchell is a bulldog at the top of the key. They right now, even without filling out the roster, given what we know about Eric Spoelstra's defense and his architect of some of the best defenses we've ever seen, I think you're going to see the Miami Heat be a top three defense next season if Giannis is healthy, and potentially the best defense if Giannis is healthy. And then the offense with that new system that they had last season with a lot of movement, a lot of space, and the fact that they were able to do that and get a top 12 offense last season, which actually better than their defense, I think there's a chance that they're going to surprise people with how good they are offensively. But a lot of that was Norm Powell, Dan, and we don't know if he's going to be back. We're going to drill down deeper on the roster questions with the Miami Heat as they fill it out here as we approach free agency. They're going to have to figure out how they get Andrew Wiggins and Norm Powell back. They might not have either of them. Depending on how things go, we're going to drill down even deeper on this Giannis to Miami situation, a blockbuster deal that now I know with the LaMelo trade and the Julius Randle trade, a lot of people have kind of forgotten about it. But this is a monstrous trade in the NBA, a two-time MVP going to the Miami Heat. We'll see what happens as they fill out this roster. We're going to give you guys the options here as we come back from the break. All right, Dan, the big number this week is 2.9, the number of expected all-NBA awards for Giannis Antetokounmpo going forward for the Miami Heat now that he's with that organization. I did that based on a sample of 8 all-time great bigs, modern-day bigs, who have won an MVP award and how many they won after the age 31 season for Giannis Antetokounmpo. That is the big number. But we got 3 little numbers from you, Dan. What's your first little number talking about this trade?
First little number is 10, which is how many members of the 2025-26 Miami Heat made at least 53 pointers. 4 of those 10 players now play for the Milwaukee Bucks in Kal-El Ware, Kasparis Jakusconis, Tyler Herro, and Jaime Jaquez. 3 of them, Norm Powell, Andrew Wiggins, and Simone Fontecchio, either are or can become free agents. And that leaves just 3 players who've made at least 53s last year. One of them is Bam Adebayo, who we've talked a lot about him becoming sort of a stretch five. He only shot 32% from 3 last season, his first time as a high-volume three-point shooter. There's Davion Mitchell, who's a career 35% three-point shooter on pretty low volume for a guard. And there's Pella Larsen, who is a career 33% three-point shooter on pretty low volume for a guard. So there's also Bobby Portis. In fairness, he's coming along with Giannis, and he had the best three-point shooting season of his career last year. Open question just how much he can play with Giannis and Bam, but certainly a stretch big man off the bench. How big an issue, Tom, do you think that three-point shooting is for the Heat as currently constructed? I mean, there's some people that are saying, like, you know, you don't really necessarily need that kind of floor spacing. Giannis is just so good at getting to the rim on his own. Maybe you expect a big jump from Bam as a floor spacing five. But do you anticipate the lack of shooting on this roster as currently constructed being an issue for the kind of offensive evolution you were talking about as they try to get that level up to where the defense is at?
Yeah, totally an issue, especially when you're talking about Giannis and his ability to get downhill and put so much pressure on the rim. You want to surround him with shooters who can take advantage of all those defenses collapsing. And you can see with that second round pick that they got in on draft night last night, what they really need is shooting. And they got one of the best shooters in college basketball last season. Ryan Conwell took 9.6 three-pointers a game at U of L.
Get him up.
In the ACC. 35% shooting from him from downtown on 9.6 attempts per game. At Xavier, he shot 7 three-pointer attempts with 41% conversion rate. Same percentage at Indiana State the year before that. He's bouncing around fifth team in 5 years. Now that he's gone to the Miami Heat in the draft. The guy can shoot. And so that's obvious that they were able to target one of the best shooters in college basketball last season with the second round pick. Another opportunity for them to improve their perimeter shooting in the draft. So yeah, they obviously did not have their 13th pick because they traded it to Milwaukee in this deal. But I think it's another opportunity for them to find shooting on the open market. I think Anfernee Simons makes a lot of sense as an acquisition potentially this offseason, as a kind of a make good deal, is that he can reestablish his value across the league after getting traded from Portland to Boston, or Chicago and Boston. Kind of want to see what a guy like that in the Miami Heat system is going to be able to get a lot of shots up. I know there's going to be players who are looking to, you know, try to be the three-point spacer for the Miami Heat in the open market next to Giannis Antetokounmpo and Bam Adebayo, two great guys in creating three-point shots for others, passing bigs. So we'll see, but that is that's a concern of mine, that they just don't have the spacing as of now to maximize and optimize Giannis Antetokounmpo. And it's something that in the first year of having LeBron James and Chris Bosh was a real problem, is with Mike Miller getting hurt. Udonis Haslem's not a three-point shooter. How do they get three-point shooting? Well, it came in the years after that. They got Ray Allen and Shane Battier. So that's kind of the template that I'm working on, is can the Miami Heat do enough this season to be a really good team? But I think the shooting is probably going to come down, maybe not this season, but in the years after that. Again, if Giannis is going to be all NBA for the next 3-4 years at that level, a two-time MVP, Defensive Player of the Year candidate, they're going to have to find some shooters around him to maximize all that power on both ends of the floor. They've done it with Max Strus, Duncan Robinson, and I'm curious to see who they're going to find the next one in that lineage of guys that they were picking up undrafted and turn him into one of the best three-point shooters in the league. So we'll find out. But Dan, yeah, shooting is going to be a real problem around this team,
particularly because they don't have a whole lot of money to go find it, which brings us to our second little number this week, which is not a very little number at all. I guess little in the grand scheme of the league, but not the grand scheme of things overall. Little number is 18.3 million. So yeah, big number, all things considered. But in the context of where the Heat are now, that's roughly how many dollars they project to be underneath the first apron, according to our pal Keith Smith over at SpotTrack. That is where the Heat are now hard capped at the first apron after the Giannis deal. So they cannot exceed the first apron. They have $18.3 million in space, according to his projections. And they've got five open roster spots after the trade. One of those, as you mentioned, will go to Ryan Conwell in all likelihood, second round pick they've got. So yeah, shooting, low cost contract for a second round rookie, that is, you know, that's nice. That goes in there. They might also need to replace Norman Powell, as you mentioned. Norm Powell is about to hit unrestricted free agency when the new league year turns over. He just made the All-Star team. He also just made more than $30 million a year, so I don't think he's particularly excited to take a pay cut. And he is reportedly drawing some interest on the market, including from the Detroit Pistons, who just opened up some more cap space with their trade to move off of Isaiah Stewart that sent him over to the Memphis Grizzlies. So now, like, there might be some teams out there that have some money to spend and that look at on a pretty unappetizing guard market and free agency, look and say, like, Norm's the best option out there. We got to throw a bag at him. And if that happens, he's probably not coming back to Miami. So you're, you know, replacing him in the starting lineup, and you're replacing the high volume, high efficiency shooting off the dribble or off the catch that he provided. So you look at this and say, there's four or so roster spots that need to be filled up. Minimum salaries for veterans are around $3 million. Like, there's not a lot of space to be able to go to put this. So but then you get to the playoffs, and you get to the deep parts of the playoffs, and roster, depth charts get slashed, right? Rotations get cut to the bone. And it's just really about how good are your top five, six, seven guys. Mm. How big of a concern do you think that the depth is at this point? And I guess where the limited pathways of flexibility that they have to be able to round things out with what, again, might not be a particularly robust free agent class.
Yeah, I think what you're going to see, that $18.1 million number, it'll get bigger once they bring back Andrew Wiggins, if they do that. I mean, he has a player option for $30 million, and they can re-sign him at, say, 18, 19, 20 a year, and then be able to pry open a little bit more space under that number. So there are ways for the Miami Heat to bring back one of those two guys, whether it's Andrew Wiggins or Norm Powell, but bringing them back both that would take maybe another aspiration deal in order to make it happen. I don't know how that Miami Heat would do that, but they look, this is on the free agency market, is a very thin free agency market, but part of that is because teams already have a lot of their cap space eaten up with extensions. And so when you're looking at Norm Powell destinations, it's not a lot of teams. You mentioned Detroit. There are not a lot of teams that are going to be able to afford Norm Powell at a $30 million number. And so there is potential for the Miami Heat to get a guy on 30 cents on the dollar, just because there just isn't a lot of teams that have the cap space to get bring in and sign a real key figure in free agency. So they might benefit from that. And I do remember, Shane Battier turned down a much more lucrative offer from Toronto and elsewhere just because he wanted to go and play with the Miami Heat with LeBron James and win a championship. He was willing to take a really steep discount. That doesn't always work. We've seen that time and time again around the league, as veteran guys want to win a championship and they take a discount and it still does not work out for them. So we'll see what the Miami Heat do. But again, I feel bullish about the Heat's opportunity here to add real key players. And especially because, you know, Sacramento Kings, they've got DeMar DeRozan on a non-guaranteed contract next season. I don't think he's going to save the spacing issues, but off the bench, if they can get DeMar DeRozan on a veteran deal to play for them, if he is indeed waived by the Sacramento Kings or not retained by the Sacramento Kings, or a Zach LaVine if they decide to waive him. These are things that we'll probably find out in the next week or so. They're not free agents right now, but they could potentially be free agents. So keep an eye on DeMar DeRozan, whether he would be open to joining the Miami Heat if he is indeed waived or not brought back by the Sacramento Kings.
It's a great point. And to the folks watching on YouTube, you just saw up on the screen from Barry Jackson, longtime Heat beat writer down in South Florida, noting that there is also a $15 million mid-level exception that the Heat could have access to be able to use at least part of that. So there are some other ways for them, either by getting off money. You mentioned Nikola Jovic earlier. He kind of went out of the rotation last year. He's on, I believe, like a four-year, $63 million deal. Like, if you could find a way to get off of him, turn him into something else. Like, there are pathways here, and that Heat front office, obviously, excellent at finding and widening those pathways and, you know, beating every, looking around every corner and under every rock to find opportunities to improve the roster. Listen, maybe just go down the bench and, you know, Wayne Ellington's an assistant coach there now. Just grab him, put him out on the court, station him in the corner, say the man with the golden arm can shoot some threes. Our third and final little number this week, we're going to shift it to the other side of this deal. 18 is our third and final little number this week. That was the Milwaukee Bucks' projected win total without Giannis Antetokounmpo last season, based on their point differential with him off the floor, according to our friends at Cleaning the Glass. They actually outperformed that. They were 15-31 in the games Giannis missed last year, which would be about a 27 win pace. Still not much to write home about, but when Giannis was off the floor, but the games that he played in and obviously the games that he missed, just the possessions with him not out there, they got outscored by 10.7 points per 100, which was the same as the Brooklyn Nets' full season net rating last year, which is, you know, not where you want to be. If it sounds like that's bad, it's because it is. And as it stands, obviously, he's now in Miami, so Milwaukee will have all of its possessions without Giannis Antetokounmpo on the floor next year. And right now, it looks like their best players heading into next season are Tyler Hero, Ryan Rollins, Miles Turner, Kevin Porter Jr., if he's back. The trade return here is obviously very much about the future, the far future, like after 2030, where the picks and the swaps and everything are going to come into play. The bet that the Bucks are making there is Giannis aging and maybe falling off a cliff and injuries piling up and yada yada. And by the time we get to 2 or 3 years down the road, the Heat are in pretty dire straits and we get all their draft goodies. That's the kind of the thought process here. But just for right now, as we are looking into the 2026-27 Bucks, what do we make of them, Tom Haberstroh?
Oof, that's what we make of them. It's
not
going to be pretty. It's not going to be pretty, man. Relegation zone, that's the new term that we have for being in the bottom three of the standings. You are not going to be able to optimize your picks. If you are in the bottom three of the NBA draft lottery, you're going to have not the maximum three lottery balls in years past. That had, if you're the worst team in the NBA, you had the best chance at winning the number one overall pick, but that is not the case going forward. So they have no incentive to tank next season because their pick goes to the Atlanta Hawks in a swap. So when you're talking about whether the Milwaukee Bucks will want to tank next season, there's two reasons why they're not going to. Yeah, Taylor Jenkins, I don't know if he signed on to this deal thinking Giannis was going to be there. I'm guessing he had a clue that things could go differently when he signed on to replace the head coach there. When you're talking Doc Rivers, when you're talking about the opportunity for him, it's just rebuilding. They're in a full out rebuild and they don't have the upside of, you know, the futility of the years past. You could say, hey, at least we have a shot at getting the number one overall pick. The Washington Wizards, Utah Jazz, and Memphis Grizzlies are evidence of that. Chicago Bulls also decided to tank last season and finally got a top four pick, and they ended up with Caleb Wilson. That's not the case for the Milwaukee Bucks. I expect that Ryan Rollins, also given that they drafted a really good point guard in this week's draft, I expect Ryan Rollins to get a few phone calls around the league to see, check in on the availability of him. As well as Miles Turner, because I just don't see a future of him now that Giannis is gone. What are they really going to get, have there? I would expect they're going to try to get some assets and move off of some of their veterans. One of those veterans, by the way, I didn't mention in the last segment that Milwaukee used to have, Chris Middleton, I could see signing with the Miami Heat as a free agent, given his history with Giannis and him being at the tail end of his career, the twilight of his career, wants to probably play for a championship and winning environment. I suspect that Chris Middleton, the Miami Heat, that's the type of player that they would add. So this season next year with Amen and Braden Burries, it's not going to be a pretty. Amen. He's a good prospect, but he's very similar in Giannis in that he's a raw 6'10", needs to fill out his body and improve a lot of areas of his game to capitalize on a top four recruiting ranking. Before he went to Tennessee last year, he was fourth in the NBA, not in the NBA, but in the recruiting rankings before, in the same class with Darren Peterson, AJ DeBonsa, and Caleb Wilson. He was fourth on that list. So high upside guy. But Khalil Ware was in the doghouse with Eric Spoelstra for a lot of last season. Didn't trust him in closing minutes in big time situations because I don't think he was ready to contribute to a playoff team quite yet. And so he's years away from being that level of player, but certainly the upside is there for a lot of these players. But Milwaukee certainly has a chance to be in the bottom three next season. And Atlanta's kind of bummed about that because they have the ability to draft for them and probably won't be able to optimize that.
Yeah, I think that if I was Taylor Jenkins, I might, you know, ask for an extension now. I know I just signed a new contract, but maybe like let's give me as long a runway as possible here to try to get this thing corrected, because I think the relevant win total, yeah, 18 was the projected win total based on the point differential with Giannis off the floor last season. That was our third little number. The worst winning percentage in Bucks history. 183 winning percentage, a 15-67 season. It was Giannis's rookie year when they were basically starting from scratch. And it does feel a little bit like we are moving in that direction with the Milwaukee Bucks. And you mentioned that the pick next year goes out to Atlanta. The years 2028 through 2030, those ones are going out to Portland from the Dame for Drew trade. And yeah, there's just the next few years, it's like a little bit akin to when the Brooklyn Nets had to kind of start over after having given up all their draft capital. And it was, you know, rebuilding, kind of replanting salted earth and trying to grow something new there. It feels a little bit like that's where things are going to be for the Bucks over the next couple of years. And hopefully, yeah, Braden Burries and Nate Ament and, you know, some of whatever other young prospects they're able to develop, whether it's Yakushonis or Ware or whoever, can turn into something that's fun to watch, something competitive, something consistently credible on both ends of the floor as the Bucks try to refill their coffers and get back to a place where they can mount a more, you know, make bigger offers for more talent to get in the door and kind of put themselves back in position to be competitive. But I think the process back there is probably going to be a long one.
Well, the team that the Milwaukee Bucks traded Giannis to, the Miami Heat, lost to the Charlotte Hornets in the play-in tournament in
Look
Charlotte.
At the Segway King.
From LaMelo Ball with the clutch shot at the rim, and then the big play on the other end to block the shot. Miles Bridges to save Kobe White. But LaMelo Ball is gone from Charlotte.
Where'd he go?
We're going to talk about that trade and discuss what the heck just happened in the league with the Minnesota Timberwolves trading for LaMelo Ball. Naz Reid going in the deal. We'll talk about that, break it all down, coming up right now. All right, Dan, the big trade on Thursday morning. We got to break it down. LaMelo Ball and Josh Green traded from the Charlotte Hornets to the Minnesota Timberwolves for Naz Reid, a first-round swap in 2028, a first-round swap in 2029, a swap in 2030, and a first, all unprotected first in 2033. I don't know what the NBA is going to look like in 2033. Is there going to be an NBA in 2033? This gave me all the heebie-jeebies after I saw that number, because I was like, all right, the new NBA draft reform that we're all talking about is kicking in for the next three seasons, 27, 28, and 29. That 2030 swap, who knows if there's going to be a draft anymore in 2030 when they revise the draft lottery system. And then 3 years after that, is the unprotected first that the Charlotte Hornets got from the Minnesota Timberwolves. But that's beside the point. The real point here is LaMelo Ball, after six seasons with the Charlotte Hornets, is no longer part of the organization that drafted him third overall. This is, man, I could see anything happening here with the Minnesota. They could win the title with LaMelo Ball and Anthony Edwards and Rudy Gobert. I also could see this just being a complete dumpster fire with LaMelo Ball's maturity and leadership issues that we saw in Charlotte, and the fact that he missed almost every other game while he was with the Charlotte Hornets the last few seasons, was not healthy, had ankle issues. In the play-in, he's lost three play-in games. Three out of four, two under James Borrego, and one last year against Charles Lee, completely collapsing in a couple of those games. This trade is a huge swing from Tim Connelly, the executive for the Minnesota Timberwolves. I'm still trying to wrestle with the notion that LaMelo Ball is the savior for Anthony Edwards in Minnesota, despite him not playing at all in the playoffs in his tenure with the Charlotte Hornets. So Dan, like I like the idea of them getting a ball handler for Anthony Edwards, a guy who can shoot it from downtown, pass with the best of them, and have that size at 6'7", 6'8", that you can imagine next to Anthony Edwards is going to be so fun to watch. But I also feel like the downside is pretty big, and the downside looks like Anthony Edwards trade watch. That's what I think the downside is of this trade. So it's just like the variance of outcomes with this trade is so vast, more vast than I think of the Giannis trade. I think the difference, the range of great outcomes and terrible outcomes is very real on this LaMelo Ball trade. His on-court, off-court splits were outrageously good. Reason why he was all-star last season. And I do think when you're talking about LaMelo Ball, he does fit the type of skill set that you would want next to Anthony Edwards. It's just, how reliable can he be, given how injured he's been? And because of all the off-court issues here in Charlotte, you would imagine that you can't really pencil him in for 70, 80 games next season. I mean, that's true for a lot of stars, but even more so with LaMelo Ball. I like the upside, but I also am terrified of the downside.
I think that's true on both sides of the deal, honestly. And I think that's what kind of makes it, the more that we've thought about it over the course of the last few hours, like a fascinating trade, right? It is essentially the Hornets selling at what they believe is basically the peak value of LaMelo Ball, right? Like, and I think it's hard to ignore that he played more games last year and nearly as many minutes last year as he had in the two previous seasons combined. And that, yeah. I mean, cast your mind back 6 or 7 months or whatever, but like we were on this show talking about trying to like rack our brains, figuring out what kind of trade you could even construct for LaMelo Ball, right? Like, is it just going to be like a challenge trade with the Hawks for Trae Young? Because who knows where he goes? Is it basically my problem for your problem with Memphis for Ja Morant? Like, and then he has this fantastic season. They do have that fantastic second half or like more final two thirds of the season, really, from like December, mid-December on. And he rehabilitates his value to the point where now it's you're getting an unprotected future first, you're getting three swaps, you're getting a second, and you're getting a like positive player in Naz Reid to get to move on from him. And so the concern for the Hornets is like the entire offense flowed out of and through him. And so what does it look like without him? And do we just kind of set on fire all that goodwill that we manifested over the last several months of last year? And the first, which is the first time in what, like a decade and a half, 20 years, mm-hmm. that there was like real excitement about a Charlotte Hornets team. And I think that's real. I think that's a concern. And I'm interested in what that feels like in Charlotte, where you are. And then from the Timberwolves perspective, it's like this went from we have Ant and Karl Anthony Towns and Rudy Gobert as the cornerstone of this, whatever we're building next. And now Kat's gone and Kat turned into Julius Randle and Dante DiVincenzo. Dante DiVincenzo is going to miss this entire season, likely with a ruptured Achilles tendon. Julius Randle is out in what this now is encompassing multiple teams. This deal, he goes out and then you have kind of no power forwards right now on this roster. And you've built, but you have solved the problem of we really need a point guard to get Anthony Edwards off the ball, to be able to get everyone else easier shots, to be able to raise the floor for everybody else and then kind of make the offense easier for everyone. It has come at the cost of, is Jaden McDaniels your power forward now? Are you ready to get like more real minutes out of Jean Beringer, who like barely played as a 19-year-old rookie last year? Is like Rocco Zakarski getting real minutes as your 7'2" backup center? Like, where is the four coming from? More moves need to happen here. And so like there are, I think it's one of the things that I love about these kind of decisions in the NBA or roster building issues. You're not going to fix everything. You're not going to solve every problem. It's, can I fix my weak, either can I augment my strengths to the point that they're going to render my weaknesses irrelevant? Or can I get to the right, like the right collection of strengths and weaknesses to win this matchup? And so the Wolves, I think they come out of that series against the Spurs and falling short there and falling short in the previous Western Conference Finals against the Thunder, kind of feeling like we've reached the ceiling of what this version of the build can be. We don't believe that Julius Randle is going to be able to be the number two offensive play creator and option that gets us further than, you know, than these teams in San Antonio and Oklahoma City. So what do? We search for the offensive upside, the biggest offensive upside swing we can get that solves our point guard problem, that gets Ant off the ball, that potentially creates lobs for Rudy, that gets more catch and shoot threes for guys like Anthony Edwards, who's an elite catch and shoot 3-point shot maker, and, you know, incoming rookie Isaiah Evans out of Duke, who was one of the best, you know, like catch and shoot guys or, you know, like high volume 3-point shooters in the draft. Like we are going to really try to hit the gas offensively and hope that that is going to be good enough to mitigate whatever downsides we see from the lack of size if we can't find better options at the four spot. I think it's fascinating. And I mean, I don't know who's going to wind up being right here, but I think it's super telling that the Wolves were like, we need to up the variance here to give ourselves a real chance. And we believe that LaMelo Ball is the right kind of fit for what we want to be. And that the Hornets, basically at the first chance they got to get value back for LaMelo, we're like, we will gladly take a step back if that's what this means. I think that both sides of that are fascinating to me.
Yeah, I mean, it reminds me of the Milwaukee Bucks situation we talked about them a second ago, is with Giannis, is just they revamped, they move off of Drew Holiday, the championship guy, and then they decide, all right, let's try it with Damian Lillard. When that doesn't work, let's try it with Miles Turner. That didn't work either, and then Giannis is out the door. And it's obviously not apples to apples, considering the Timberwolves didn't win a championship and didn't move off of that. But like the trying to appease the superstar in Anthony Edwards and try to maximize him in a vacuum, I can understand why LaMelo Ball helps, and I would assume it helps Anthony Edwards get off the ball, not double teamed. And it's going to be a lot harder to do that when you got LaMelo Ball and I would assume him out there. So they'd certainly have solved that issue. But by taking one step forward, I wonder if they took two steps back by getting rid of Naz Reid in this deal, who I think has the potential to be an all-star in Charlotte. You look at his on-court numbers, his impact numbers. He has all-star potential as a three. He's one of the best three-point shooting big men in the NBA, and he's a great passer. He's a good defender, a good rebounder. Not elite in any of those categories outside of the three-point shooting, but I think he's a really not a buy-low candidate, because that kind of undersells what he was doing in Minnesota last year. But now, without having to, you know, share minutes with Julius Randle and Rudy Gobert, I feel like Naz Reid has a real breakout potential in Charlotte. Another thing on this, Coby White was just re-signed with the Charlotte Hornets at about $25 million a year, over a three-year deal, $74 million. It's a good number for him. He was probably not going to get that from the Chicago Bulls, who have a lot of things to figure out with the new front office, and he gets a fresh start in Charlotte. I will also point out the ghastly off-court numbers for when LaMelo Ball was off-court and Con Knipple and Brandon Miller were on the floor for the Charlotte Hornets. Just an absolute disaster when all three of those guys were on the floor. I'm talking LaMelo Ball, Brandon Miller, and Con Knipple. The Hornets outscored opponents by 15.7 points every 100 possessions. When it was just Brandon Miller and Con Knipple, that went to minus 8.4. That's a 24 net swing there between with LaMelo on the floor and when he was off the floor last year for the Charlotte Hornets. Huge on-court impact. But I will point out that with Coby White on the floor and playing next to Con Knipple and Brandon Miller, that was in 44 minutes. It's a tiny sample size, which speaks to how this is still a shocking trade that the Hornets just saw the best five-man lineup in the NBA last season and decided, yep, we're going to go in a different direction. In 44 minutes, Coby White, Con Knipple, and Brandon Miller on the floor last season. The Hornets, according to PBPstats.com, they won 111 to 98 in those 44 minutes. That's a plus 13. Tiny sample size, but Coby White, I don't think will be the starting point guard for them next year. They have a $40 million trade exception as a part of this deal once you wrap it in with the Brooklyn Nets and Chicago deal. They're going to be on the market for another point guard. I don't think this is it. I think they've got another move up their sleeve. And so I think the LaMelo Ball trade, as shocking as it is, I think we're still not have heard the last of it from Minnesota and Charlotte. Can't believe it. I really can't believe it. Giannis is a Miami Heat. LaMelo Ball is a Minnesota Timberwolf. And we'll see what happens next in this transaction cycle. Still more to come. We'll talk about it all next week. Dan, any last thoughts before we get you out of here and we wrap up this week's episode of The Big Number?
Naz Reid All-Star, I feel like is going to be rattling around in my head as I walk to go pick up my kid from school. Like it's a big take for The Big Number. I think the last thing I will say just for the Hornets is I wonder if this is, whether it's because of the, you know, we got the healthiest season of LaMelo that we're ever going to get, and we'll see where we go from here. This feels to me like, as much as we were talking about, that was an incredible run the last, like, you know, from Christmas on for them, and the numbers were great. Number one offense in the league, number six defense in the league, number two net rating. They had the profile of a contender for like two thirds of the season. This feels like their brain trust, which has made a lot of smart and savvy moves here over the last, you know, year and a half, couple of years, saying we're not so sure that's real. We feel like maybe we need to pump the brakes a little bit rather than try to go all in on this. And by the way, make the idea of what do you pay LaMelo Ball on a contract extension for which he is now eligible? Let's make that someone else's problem and try to sort of, you know, recoup our draft capital too. They now have, by I think this was Yossi Gozlan had this, 12 first round picks and 15 second round picks over the next 7 years. With that $40.8 million traded player exception, as you mentioned, all their salary cap exemptions, the mid-level, the biannual, whatever, they've still got a lot of ways to improve this team. And so I think that they have decided, rightly or wrongly, maybe that was too much too fast. And I mean, is there a better encapsulation of too much too fast than LaMelo Ball? I don't know. But here we are. And the Hornets are going to look dramatically different. The Timberwolves are going to look dramatically different. And I will be very, very fascinated to see how these teams look in a week's time. Because by the way, Tom, we're about to hit free agency. And I think it's fascinating. It'll be very, very interesting to see how they fill out the rest of their rosters, just like the Heat and the rest of these teams that are all trying to go and to, you know, knock the Knicks off the top of the mountain here. It's pretty amazing.
Well, it is pretty amazing that this time last week, I did not foresee Giannis on the Heat and LaMelo Ball out of Charlotte. So lots to talk about next week. Want to thank Madison, Colin, and Jason for helping us out this week on the Big Number, doing double stacking these shows today and on the draft. Go check out Yahoo NBA for more on YouTube. And we'll be back next week. Thanks so much, everybody, and have a great weekend.